Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Those guys up here.
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers. Quit it
now! Welcome in, Houston. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's the Bullpen with Sean Mapes, Brian McDonald, no Andrew Carlson. I don't know why Andrew's off today. Is he starting a 10-day vacation? Is that what he has the luxury of doing that you and I don't have, Sean? Is there a reason for this absence?
I will not be throwing too many stones about Andrew's vacation.
Is that because you're also about to take a
this
week?
This is the last thing I'm doing this
yeah,
for 2024.
I'm actually taking a week off as well. Well, at least 5 days. I got roped into working some sports map radio tomorrow, but yeah, so no Andrew Carlson today, and the show will be off next week, but he'll be back with that first show in January. But lots to get into on the bullpen today. Our man BT is behind the glass. Sean and I, of course, will talk lots of Texans. We'll have an Astros conversation coming up at 12:45. Joel Blank from the Killer Bees will join us at 1 o'clock to talk about the Rockets. And then we've got some very hacky Christmas segments, a Houston sports naughty or nice list. And BT, if you want to think of your naughty and nice list for Houston sports, we'll include you on this. And then, of course, at 1:30, the groundbreaking, award-winning, sports radio landscape-changing Mount Rushmore Plus One will be coming your way. And if you haven't heard it, it has a brand-new open. This will be only the second time we've got to use that open. So some of you may not even heard that. Of course, not Santa's heard that because he listens to every show. But we'll start off right now with the Texans. Texans-Browns on Sunday. I think it's fairly simple, Sean, as far as what the Texans need to do to get into the playoffs. Obviously, if they win out, they will make it into the playoffs. I'm not even going to look up tiebreaker scenarios for that, because if they somehow get to 11 wins by winning the remaining three, they're in the playoffs. Yeah. And I haven't cared to look at all the scenarios, but I'm pretty sure things will take care of itself. If they get to 10 wins, at 10-7, they would probably also be in the playoffs. So you probably could afford to lose this game against the Browns when you don't have the luxury of having C.J. Stroud out there. But it's still a huge game that if the Texans win, they're pretty much a lock for the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. Because so much, I mean, as it stands right now with only three games left, so many teams in that AFC wild card mix, a lot hinges really on the last week of the season against the Colts. That is, if we're ranking them, the most must-win game.
Yeah, because Titans are already eliminated from the playoffs. And if you beat the Colts, not only do you probably put yourself in, but you probably knock them out.
Exactly.
Or at least there's a chance for that.
Exactly, exactly. So that it's setting up for that to be two teams for one spot, more or less, that last week of the season. So, like you said, given the state of the rest of the schedule, like this isn't like the most must-win of must-win games, but it is another team in the AFC wildcard picture.
I don't want to call it a luxury, because you need two wins to get in. So this is a game out of one game out of three. So you need one of these games to go your way. And it's not really, I mean, it is a team you're trailing in the wild card, but I don't think you're really competing with them for that spot. I think they're kind of a level above you right now.
There's also the situation of, I mean, like you said earlier, if they win the remaining three, they basically
don't need any help. No.
Don't worry about the tiebreakers
if they win out.
If you go 2-1 those last three, you probably might need some help. And then that's where it gets, you know, a little bit tricky, because you know, you don't actually control your own destiny. So.
No, you don't. But, I mean, I'm feeling pretty good about it, because if you win two out of your last three, and we'll get into some of the specifics with the Texans-Browns matchup on Sunday here in a second. But if you win two out of your last three, at that point you'll have had tiebreakers over the Steelers, over the Broncos, over the Bengals. If you're beating the Browns, right? Possibly, like, let's say two out of the three are Browns. Somehow they lose to the Titans at home, but you could still possibly get tiebreakers over the Browns and the Colts, depending on how that works out. And the Texans will put themselves winning 2 out of 3 in a position with their conference record to be in decent standing for that tiebreaker as well. So,
also, if you go 3-0, you're very much in play for the division.
You are, yeah. So we don't even know who Trevor Lawrence is playing Sunday for the Jaguars.
He has just cleared.
Oh, he just cleared? Okay, yes. Sorry. What I was listening to coming in was actually from last night, and I guess he hadn't cleared yet?
Literally the last 5 minutes.
Last 5 minutes. Okay, so Trevor Lawrence is, C.J. Beathard? Was that their backup?
Yeah, Beathard.
Good man.
Iowa quarterback? Man, he could really sling it and hand it off.
We should have called up R.J., Had him break down C.J. Beathard for us.
Report for C.J.
Hey, Josh, I know, or R.J., I know we haven't heard from you in like 6 months, but can you break down C.J.
No,
Beathard?
No Lakers in-season tournament questions.
No. We definitely couldn't ask him that. You think he hung a banner for that? Did he buy the shirt?
Yeah, no, he bought the shirt.
Did he buy the you have a Big 12 316 shirt. Yes. Is it possible R.J. has an in-season tournament 316 shirt?
Possible.
Quick aside, so the Lakers are hanging like a different type of looking banner for the in-season tournament. What are your thoughts? I thought that was kind of weird, but I mean, I get it. They won something, but when you're the Lakers and you have, what, 30 billion titles, like, would you hang a banner for that?
It looks like, and this is a very presumptuous move by the Lakers, is that it's one banner for all the in-season tournaments that they win.
Oh, so they're predicting many more to come.
Because
yes.
The way it's formatted, it doesn't actually make any sense unless you're like, oh, no, they're trying to fit like 8 of them.
Well, at least this banner was more accurate than the Jimbo Fisher plaque, right? So
at least there's one year
actually written in on that. All right, let's get into Texans Browns, and of course we'll carry some of this conversation over to the next segment and the segment after that. Again, before we get into the Astros, and then Joel Blank will join us at 1 o'clock to talk Rockets. We're going to hear some audio here from D'Amico Ryans in a second, but I want to talk about kind of our level of concern for different aspects of this game, because working this week here on 97.5 on the various shows, Killer Bees and Connor Beer, I've listened to you and Paul on the way in. There feels to be, you know, from the city, from some of the hosts here, a lot of pessimism as far as this matchup with the Browns, even going as so far as to say that I think most people expect them to lose. So let's break down some of these levels of concern. First one you have to start with is you don't have C.J. Stroud. You have Case Keenum, your backup quarterback, someone who we thought was your third-string quarterback at one point. He wins the game against Tennessee. And we're going to hear from D'Amico Ryans right now. Texans head coach says this isn't Case's first rodeo. He's won a lot of big games in this league.
Yeah, with Case, he just has the experience, right? He's been there. He's done that. As he told the guys, it's not his first rodeo. He's been there. He's won big games. This was a big game for us. And he stepped up and did, you know, he's been there before. So it wasn't too big for him. He was made the right plays, you know. And he helped us, right? Guys are in the right position. We ran the ball well, and I think that's what helped Case and the offense by us running the ball well, which is something, you know, we hadn't done well over the past couple of weeks. So the way Motor ran the ball, the way Case played efficiently, Noah making big plays, Dalton, everybody stepping up when they needed to.
Quick aside before we get into what D'Amico said there, the term or the phrase, not his first rodeo. At what number rodeo, Sean, do you have to be at before you feel comfortable in something? I've always, like, they always say it's not your first rodeo. Yeah. Applying first rodeo, you're just a nervous wreck.
Yeah, the second rodeo.
At what rodeo are you now comfortable? It's like the 10th rodeo? Is this like a 10,000 hours thing? Like, what rodeo do we have to get to before it's no longer a problem?
I think like third or fourth.
Third
honestly.
Or fourth rodeo, okay.
Yeah, the first one, obviously.
I think for
second one, it's still like
second
iffy.
One's a little new. Yeah,
and by the third one, it's like how many different ways is there to get bucked off a bronco,
fall off a bull?
Yeah, like,
to hope that the rodeo clowns bails you out.
Yeah, it's like after that, you're clearly an insane person for being in this many rodeos. So yeah, I think around four.
I think going forward, I'm going to count or phrase it as, you know, this is my fifth rodeo, so I'm pretty solid. But getting into D'Amico's point, I mean, Keenum obviously has been in this league for a long time, played for probably, you know, a Ryan Fitzpatrick amount of teams across this league during his career. So, yeah, I thought, you know, look, there were moments in that Titans game where he probably could have thrown interceptions. He had some interception-worthy plays. Not every moment was, you know, smooth and leaving me with the most confidence out there. But I do think I have massively more faith in Case Keenum than Davis Mills. So My level of concern for Case Keenum is certainly less than it would be for Davis Mills in this game. And I know the Browns defense is great, but Titans defense, I mean, while they were pretty poor against the pass, it's still a Mike Vrabel defense. It's still on the road. It's still a good run defense that could have forced Keenum into some obvious passing downs. And they were a lot of early obvious passing downs early in that game in the first half, at least. So I actually feel kind of optimistic about Keenum. Where are you at with your confidence level right now with Keenum and specifically this matchup against Cleveland?
I'll say that Case Keenum definitely earned some trust last week going into Tennessee and beating the Oilers. So I do think that there is some level of like, okay, not only is this not his first rodeo overall, it's not his first rodeo this season. So, you know, there's a little bit of, because last week was the most, you said this week people were kind of down on the Browns, yeah, expecting a, mm-hmm, or on the Texans expecting a loss to the Browns. I think last week when
you think it was even more.
I think it was
because
even more.
Because of the road aspect, maybe?
Yeah, I think because of the road
or
aspect.
Or not knowing what Keenum had.
Well, and also we thought it was Davis Mills the entire week.
True, true.
But I think it was more of that. This week, at least when it comes to Case Keenum, I feel like I know what I'm going to get. It's not going to be pitching it all over the yard. It's not going to be C.J. Stroud throwing for 450 yards. It is going to be game management, complimentary football, some plays that you're like, oh boy, I'm not sure if I love that throw, and then some throws where you do like it. You know, the Dalton Schultz catch comes to mind where you're like, my God.
What percentage of that can you really put on Keenum, though? I mean, that was Dalton Schultz just monstering
a guy. No, I'm saying that's the bad one.
Yeah, okay, that's the bad one. That's
the one where you're like, oh.
I mentioned earlier Keenum had some interception-worthy throws. That was certainly one of them. Somehow,
one of them was a pick six.
Yeah, one of them was a pick six. You're right. I mean, and without that, the game's not even close because the Titans' offense couldn't do anything, especially in the second half. But I guess where I want to go next with the Keenum conversation is just I remember thinking and saying this, I believe, on the Killer Bees or it was Connor and Beard last week, that thinking the Texans couldn't fall into a trap of trying to be too conservative against the Titans, just because I didn't. If the Texans came out and ran it on first and second down every single drive, and threw a bunch of, you know, quick screens and then really quick short passes and basically being predictably conservative, the Titans defense, as bad as they were against the pass, would be able to figure that out, predict it, and stop it. So my question is, and we'll carry over a lot of this conversation coming up in the next segment, is the Browns defense is an obvious step up. So where are you at with what you're asking from Keenum? Are you basically hoping running game, short passes, defense, Kymie Fairbairn wins the game? Is there enough trust in Keenum with Nico Collins back to be able to maybe take some shots down the field and try to open up this Browns defense?
I think there's a little bit more trust, but again, we're not running the C.J. Stroud playbook.
Yeah.
It's still going to be
what percentage of the C.J. Stroud playbook? I don't know.
10. Like, wow, 25.
Okay. That doesn't sound like much confidence.
Maybe like a 2-minute situation, you're gonna have to throw it a little bit more. So I do think, though, that there will be you will have to be a little bit more dynamic in the passing game,
because that was a stark difference first half to second half against the Titans, because they did in the first half come out and do what a lot of people asked them to do. It's like short passes, running game, don't try to push the ball down the field. One of the times,
and they're down 13-3 at halftime.
Right, and then when the second half, when they did try to, I mean, look, it wasn't all smooth. We just talked about the Dalton Schultz catch that should have been a pick.
Yeah, we're still talking about like three drives where they scored.
But it was when they started to open up a little bit. All right.
You're gonna have to be more dynamic to move the ball on a Browns defense than the Titans defense.
Certainly so. All right, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. If you want to join in on the conversation, I haven't given out the HRMP listener line yet. It's 713-780-3776. If you have any thoughts on the Texans, the Astros, the Rockets, anything else on your mind, give us a call there. And we'll carry this Texans conversation over into the next break, go over a few more concerns with this Browns matchup on Sunday, and also a few reasons for optimism when we turn here in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You've chosen wisely.
I have chosen to test this station's destructive power on your home planet of Alderaan.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, Sean Manx from the Paul Gallant Show. I am Brian McDonald, and this is the bullpen with our man BT behind the glass. Again, coming up next segment at 1 o'clock, Joel Blank from the Killer Bees will join us to talk about the Houston Rockets, who got a blowout win over basically the, C-Squad Mavericks last night. They had no Kyrie, yeah. No Luka.
The Texas Legends. That's the G League team.
The G League team. Is that really? I couldn't pull that in a million years. I know the Rockets at one point had the Rio Grande Valley Vipers.
Still is.
They still there? All right. Well, good for them. Good
Cam
for
Whitmore. Vipers legend.
That's true. He's still, yeah. Well,
he played last game.
That'll be a question we could bring up with Joel here in about 10 minutes. And, of course, coming up at 1:30, it is the award-winning segment, Mount Rushmore Plus One, with a return to Mount Rushmore Plus One. Our man, Josh Vance, all the way from Florida. Our Florida man will return to give a Mount Rushmore Plus One. I wanted to get him in for the holidays, and with Andrew out, we had the room. I haven't heard from Josh since he left, and he was always a highlight, I would say, of Mount Rushmore Plus One.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially his dating advice that involved the spice aisle at the grocery store.
always involved. It was such a common situation for him to go to.
We really do need to get a body count from Josh about how many women he's picked up in the spice aisle at the grocery store. I think we'd be shocked by the number. I don't know what side of that we'd be shocked by, but I think we'd be shocked by the number. All right, so in the few minutes we have here in this segment before we get to Joel Blank, let's finish off our Texans conversation. And I was thinking the other day about, going into the season, with the game plan that Nick Caserio seemed to have in free agency and trade, mostly free agency, he built a team, besides the draft picks, quite a bit through a lot of, one-year contracts. And even Jimmy Ward, who wasn't in a one-year contract, was a two-year contract. A lot of veterans on short deals. And with the Texans exceeding expectations this year, I believe their Vegas line was 5.5 or 6. They're already at 8, and we think they're going to get to probably, 10 would probably be their, what most of us would expect them to get to. It's going to be interesting to see how they carry that continuity, or if, destroy the continuity going into next year with these guys on one-year deals, and whether or not they can bring them back and keep this thing rolling. So I broke this down for two different groups, offense and then defense. And by the way, Kymie Fairburn also has 1 year left on his deal. I don't even have it on here, but hopefully they're able to bring
Resign
him back.
At all costs.
Resign at all costs. So yeah, that's kind of how we're going to view this. Kind of a keep trade cut, but it's more like, resign long-term. Like you're willing to pay market value, or re-sign on 1 year if you can get them on the cheap, kind of like Nick Caserio did this last season, or you're just completely willing to let them walk. So of the offensive group, we have Noah Brown, Dalton Schultz, Devin Singletary. You have some of the numbers in front of you right now. SpotTrack is projecting Noah Brown's market value at 3 years and $16 million. This year he's only making 2.6, so it's a little bit of a jump up for him. Dalton Schultz is tricky. They didn't have a market value there for him, but if you compare him to tight ends, I think where his talent would be equal to with Dawson Knox and Jonnu Smith, actually probably better than those two guys, but that's probably about where his contract would rank. You're actually looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of like a 4-year, $50 million deal if you're paying a market value. And then Devin Singletary, they have his market value listed as 3 years, $13 million. So sign long-term, pay the market value, get back on the cheap on a 1-year deal, lit walk with Noah Brown, Dalton Schultz, Devin Singletary. Where are you at with this, Sean?
So I'm starting off, I'm letting Noah Brown walk. And this is going to be something where it's more about, I expect and I would hope that the Texans target wide receivers either with their premium draft picks or in free agency.
Yeah, because they'll have some cap space.
Yeah, so I'm okay essentially using Noah Brown as like opening up a wide receiver spot by letting Noah Brown walk in hopes that you are supplementing that position, upgrading at that position using a high draft pick.
Yeah, I'm with you there. We're in agreement so far.
Which you wouldn't use for a tight end or, not a running back. Never draft.
Not in 2023. 2024.
And so now it turns into Dalton Schultz versus Devin Singletary as far as which one you want to invest short-term and which one you want to invest long-term money in. It's a tough one because investing long-term in a running back is very cheap. It's like, yeah, it's not that hard.
not to cut you off, but that's kind of where I'm leaning. I'm agreeing with you. I would let Noah Brown walk, and I would actually pay the market value for Devin Singletary. One, because I think they need to invest their premium picks in other positions. And two, you look at quote-unquote market value, it's 3 years, $13 million. Like, yeah. if that was the number Devin Singletary's agent says, you know, you agree to this, we're here, sure. I don't think we could get in the fourth, or at least I'm not willing to play the odds that whoever they get in, let's say, the fourth round after they address their more immediate needs in the draft would be able to come in and replicate what Devin Singletary has done, whereas Dalton Schultz, I mean, I like Dalton Schultz. He's had,
he's a good tight end.
Like, half of his games has been pretty good. But when you look at the value, you're talking about committing $50 million to Dalton Schultz. I'm just not willing to pay market value for what Dalton Schultz offers.
And a key part of the Devin Singletary, this long-term running back contract.
3 years.
3 years, he's 26, so you get out before he's 30.
Yeah, and you could probably get out after two.
We all know that running backs immediately die when they turn 30.
When they turn 30, someone hands them a cane and AARP subscription.
Exactly. So I think we're aligned in that the idea of paying a running back is very, it's an easier pill to swallow, especially with the way Devin Singletary's played. You can then reinforce with a sixth round pick later in the draft, so you're not having to allocate major resources to filling out that running back room.
Because I don't want this running back room to be, and I forgive me because I don't remember how many years these guys have left, but I would not want this running back room to be Damien Pierce, Dare, and a fourth round running back.
Yeah.
Just give Devin Singletary $13 million and let's kick the can down the road till ever years.
So it sounds like we're aligned.
Yeah, we're aligned on the offensive side. So quickly, we got Joel Blank coming up here in our next segment to talk about the Rockets. But quickly on the defensive side, here's where the money is going to get quite a bit bigger. So you have Jonathan Grenard, Steven Nelson, and Sheldon Rankins. Now, Rankins, because of his age, he's going to be 30. I don't think he's going to command the massive long-term deal. But the Texans did pay him $9.7 million for his one-year deal this year, which was more than I remembered. Right now, Steven Nelson, they're projecting his market value at 3 years, $30 million, which I think is probably on the low side. I thought that was a little low for – I think that number is going to go up once he actually has teams bidding on him. And then the big one, Jonathan Grenard. They didn't have a market value projected for him. And obviously, you move him down past, the guys like T.J. Watt and the Bosa brothers, Myles Garrett, Max Crosby, Khalil Mack. But then you come up to guys like Bradley Chubb, and Leonard Williams. Bradley Chubb is up over $100 million. I think Jonathan Grenard has been a much better player this year. He's got three more sacks. He's younger. But let's scratch that off because they're not going to pay him $100 million. Then you go down to the two spots, like I said, to Leonard Williams. When I say two spots, these are in rankings of average annual value of their contracts at the edge rusher position. And Leonard Williams has a three-year, $63 million contract with 45 guaranteed. I think that's more in the reasonable ballpark for Jonathan Grenard. And that might even still be too much to convince other people, other fans, to say bring back Jonathan Grenard. But Jonathan Grenard, that sort of Leonard Williams deal, Steven Nelson as market value, or Sheldon Rankins at whatever you project Sheldon Rankins, sign long-term, cheap deal, let walk, where are you at?
Jonathan Grenard's a tough one because you went through all the numbers.
I think he's the most talented, but he's also got the price tag is just so high.
Yeah, on the other hand, who are you really paying that much money to, not just on this team, but on this defense? It's a very young defense. It's a defense with a lot of manageable salary. So if you could just be like, no, he's going to be our A1 on defense as far as not just his performance, but how much he's getting paid until Will Anderson comes up, then he becomes the kind of crown jewel. Or I guess Singletary, or not Singletary, Stingley would come up before Will Anderson, 1 year before Will Anderson. But, he could be kind of the bridge. If you're going to invest a big contract in someone on defense, you invest it in him. And then once he kind of ages out and the other guys come up, then you invest in those guys. So I could see that. The problem is, I think the market is going to be a lot higher for Jonathan Grenard
than the Leonard Williams number?
Yes, because of the supply and demand of edge rushers available in free agency this year. This is part of the reason we saw Montez Sweat get traded.
Yeah, he got a massive deal.
It got massive deal and got traded
right
at the deadline to the
Bears.
For
what, a second-round pick?
Round pick. And so that was kind of a, they call it in the NBA and other sports, they call it a pre-agency move. Because
I'm with you.
No, I just I want to make sure on the radio they could.
Okay,
because I did just kind of blow through it. But it's basically a move that you're trading for someone on the last year of their contract to then renegotiate and extend them immediately.
The Texans should have done with Laremy Tunsil and did not.
Basically, yes. Yeah. It is a way to then – you're not getting in a bidding war in free agency if you just trade for the guy immediately and re-sign him. So that is something that, you know, speaks to the lack of enthusiasm that the Bears had looking ahead to the free agency pass rushers. And so if other teams feel the same way, Jonathan Greenard with the 12.5 sacks already that he's put up, the numbers he's put up this season and in season prior – I think he's going to get a pretty big deal because he's going to have a lot of bidders looking for him. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one to say sign him to a long-term deal no matter what.
It sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you probably would be comfortable signing him at the Leonard Williams number.
Yes, but I'm not sure how realistic.
Right, so let's go to what might be, God forbid, more realistic to the number I dismissed being the Bradley Chubb number, which was 5 years, $110 million.
No, I mean that.
Are you completely out? Like, once it reaches the triple digits, are you basically just like, all right, see ya?
Well, it's also a thing with NFL contracts. If it's 5 years, you kind of like, okay, so it's really three. Like,
yeah,
you know, like
true.
you kind of knock some years off with the non guarantees and such. But yeah, I just think it's going to be tough to bring back Jonathan Greenard unless they are okay just absolutely splurging on him, which. I mean, the way he's played like one of these, not like, you know, Bosa, Garrett, you know, Mac Crosby, but he's played on that next level under those guys. So I think him getting a contract like that, if I'm Jonathan Greenard and his agent, I'm like, yeah, we're getting that contract.
And truthfully, I don't think really the option of the cheap one-year re-sign would probably be realistic for either Greenard or Steven Nelson. So you're really having to pick one or the other.
And
I would lean Greenard if you're going to max someone out, and then you're trying to get Rankins on the cheap.
Yeah, Rankins on the cheap, and then I think that re-signing Nelson's more doable and more.
Hopefully, easy. We know his relationship with with Nick Caserio hasn't always been the smoothest of relationships.
That clown freak better show him his money. All right, that's all I'm saying.
All right, we're way over the break. Sorry for about that, BT. We got to get to Joel Blank here in the next segment, who we'll also probably go over with, but that's all right. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. When we get back, it'll be Joel Blank from the Killer Bees talking Rockets here with a bullpen on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.